Well, hello and welcome, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster. Today is an amazing day to take your business and your life to a new level, wouldn't you say? Today, we have a show that we're calling The Courage to End Upside Down Thinking. And boy, that's a big topic, isn't it? You know, a lot of people out there don't think correctly. I know I've done that many times myself. Maybe you have. Well, listen, why don't people make the right choices? Have you ever thought about that? Well, I sure have. In fact, I've spent two decades researching and experimenting in my own life and wondering what is it that helps people to really think right. You know, I've coached thousands of people to help them to think right in their own businesses and generate success uncommon to most. And so I want to tell you the secrets of how to do this. Wouldn't that be amazing? Imagine if your choices were 100% accurate all the time. Well, I'm going to give you that information as soon as I get back from this quick little sponsor break.
Hi, Kendi Foster here. If you have a dream to create a wellness product, I'd like to tell you about JBK Wellness Labs. They are a respected contract and white label manufacturer who helps entrepreneurs and companies develop and bring to market dietary supplements, hemp-based CBD products, plus personal care and beauty product lines. JBK Wellness products can be found on the shelves of Neiman Marcus, Whole Foods, Urban Outfitters, CVS, Ritz-Carlton Hotels, Four Seasons Hotels, and multinational direct selling companies. JBK Wellness Labs will walk you through each step from concept through finished product. If you'd like to take your next step in getting your product to market, then start your project today by going to jbkwellnesslabs.com or just Google JBK Wellness Labs.
Well, I'm really glad you tuned in today because I really do have a show that's going to really help you to change how you think and change probably what's going on in your life. How cool would that be? So how do you use your mind to get what you want? Well, first, you have to understand, I believe, how to use the mind. And it all starts with intention, doesn't it? When you intend to get something, that's the first step in using this mind to start to work for you. And I believe intention, though, can be like a wet match. If you don't have the, you ever try to light a wet match, it doesn't work very well, right? But if you have the right intention, what I would say is almost a noble goal, right? Noble goals mean you win, your customers win, your community wins, your family wins. That's the noble goal, right? So if you have something like that, that's your intention, and you get really clear, next step is to get clear with your purpose. Why am I doing this? That's how you start to get that mind to get on fire. And why is that so important? Well, here's the deal, right? It's that the mind is over our emotions. So what you focus on, you feel, okay? So if you're feeling like crap, you think you're going to go do anything? Probably not. But if you're focused on a powerful, noble goal, you have the right intention set, you have the right purpose behind it, you're probably going to feel good about that. So you're going to take your emotions are going to be on fire. You're probably going to take the right actions. If you take the right actions on a consistent basis, right, then you're probably going to what? You're probably going to get what you want? Wow, what a concept. Hey, you might even change your destiny, right? Of course, I don't believe in destiny or fate. I believe that you, as an individual, take personal responsibility for everything that's showing up in your world. Now, a lot of people argue with that. Gosh, you know, lightning showed up in my world. The storm showed up in my world. Well, it's not about something outside yourself. It's about how you respond to what shows up in your world. If you can consistently respond in an unemotional, detached way, you can start to make wise choices. I talked to a client of mine the other day. And they were having struggle with their emotions. And they were telling me that somebody was talking to them in a way that was very disrespectful. And they, now this client had been working with me for a while. So she actually called me and said, Ken, I want to let you know that I was really proud of myself. I didn't respond back to that negative criticism. I thought, wow, that's really cool. I said, so what, why not? How'd you do it? She said, I just applied what you taught me. I put a pause in and I realized it wasn't about me. Meaning put a pause in, she didn't react, right? She went silent. When I work with people, I tell them, get silent, get still, because that's when wisdom can drop in. But if you're constantly, the mind is constantly going and you're constantly responding, reacting to everything that's going on in the environment, what's going to happen is you're going to make poor choices on a continuous basis. And if you make poor choices, how are you going to feel? You're going to feel like crap. And once you feel like crap, what kind of actions are you going to take? Probably none or very little. If you take don't take the right actions, your destiny is destined, right? You're gonna keep doing what you're doing. So many people have come to me and said, you know, my greatest thinking has got me where I am, and I'm not happy about it. And I said, I understand that. Your greatest thinking will get you there. But like Einstein said, you know, all I want to know are the thoughts of God. The rest are details. Now, he was talking about being able to tune into higher realms of consciousness. And being able to tap into that, the way he did it, he asked questions all the time. Like he asked the one question, what would it be like to what would it be like to go 100,000 miles the tip of the speed of light, right? 100,000 miles per second, right? And he kept asking that question, right? So his mind started looking for the answer and he found that answer, right? E equals MC squared. He figured out the theory of relativity by asking one question. Had a couple other friends of mine that asked a powerful question. What would a mega best-selling book be like? What would be the title for the mega best-selling book? What's that title? They asked it several times, 300 times they told me. And they came out with a title. It was called Chicken Soup for the Soul, which sold over 500 million copies so far. 500 million copies. That's crazy, isn't it? Using the power of the mind. So, you know, this show is dedicated to helping you to end upside down thinking. Upside down thinking has to do, in my book, and in my thought, is just making poor choices all the time, right? Your thinking's not right. So how do you get it right? Well, I'm going to tell you this. I got a guest coming in, and he's coming in this second segment here. And he's written a book, The End of Upside Down Thinking. And his name is Mark Orber. And he's going to talk to us a little bit about that. So I hope you'll stay tuned for that segment. Because I think if you do, what's going to happen is your life is going to start to get better and better. And you're probably going to feel better. Hey, what a concept. We'll be right back.
There comes a time when you know you need to restart and regain control of your life. A time to seek freedom from the anxiety, addiction, and other issues that may be bringing you down. A time to heal and reemerge as the real you. Villa Kalima is a holistic residential recovery program exclusively for women for individualized treatment. Villa Kalima offers proven clinical and holistic therapies for the mind, body, and spirit to assure sustainable recovery. Villa Kalima focuses on healing the cause, not temporarily masking symptoms. It's the only way to truly recover and find yourself again. Villa Kalima is located in a beautiful, peaceful, resort-like setting and is a licensed and accredited residential treatment center accepting a variety of health insurances. Start your healing and renewal today by calling Villa Kalima in La Costa, California at 760-814-8214. 760-814-8214. Villa Kalima, a place for transformation.
I'm a diabetic. I need to maintain healthy glucose levels so I can live normally and still enjoy my day-to-day life. Kirlin is a 100% natural supplement that helps me do exactly that. Kirlin promotes healthy glucose levels, energy, sleep, and proper body function. I try to make the right choices, but Kirlin keeps me controlled even if I indulge in a naughty treat here and there. It's how I plan to stick around for my family.
Get $20 off Kirlin. Visit Kirlin.
We'll be right back.
Well, welcome back to the show. And as I mentioned, our show today is called The Courage to End Upside Down Thinking. I've got the upside down thinking expert with me. His name is Mark Gorber. He's an international speaker, and he is the author of An End to Upside Down Thinking. And he was awarded the IPPY Best Science Book of 2019. This is an important book. Mark, welcome to the show. I'm so glad to have you, man.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
So you've been the expert in upside down thinking. I got a feeling you wrote that book for a reason. What was going on when you wrote that book?
Well, I realized that my whole life had been upside down in terms of the way I viewed everything. And when I realized that my thinking was off base, I thought my own life changed, and I wanted to be able to help others. So that's what inspired the book.
Okay, that's good. And I'll bet your life was upside. When your life was upside down, what was going on for you?
Well, my background's, I would say, very traditional, mainstream. Went to Princeton, went into investment banking afterwards during the financial crisis in 2008, then worked at a Silicon Valley strategy firm for 10 years where I became a partner. So that my focus was always on business achievements in a mainstream sense. And it was in 2016 when I was listening to podcasts on business and health where I heard people talk about views of reality that expanded beyond just the body. And when I started to look at the science, like the U.S. government's psychic spying programs, the University of Virginia's research on children who have memories from some other life and near-death experiences, all the stuff I'd never even heard of before, that led me to do even more research. And I realized that there's more than our own individual bodies and that we're connected to something much broader.
We are. And, you know, this is a time in our nation where everything seems to be changing. You know, a lot of things we thought were stable, we're going to be here for, you know, the rest of our lives. I can think of any number of stores that have closed out that we just had a large group called Stein Mart that closed 300 stores here in the West Coast. So things are not the same. So consciousness, let's just talk about that. How does consciousness, what is it first, and how does it apply to what's going on today, or how can we apply it?
Well, consciousness is a fundamental part of all of our lives. So anyone watching this or listening to this has a consciousness that's experiencing this. So consciousness is our awareness, our ability to experience. It's sort of the I. When I say that I am speaking, that I is what I mean by consciousness. And my view of consciousness now, based on all the science that I've studied, is that consciousness that we all have doesn't come from our brain, doesn't come from our body. Rather, it's as if we're whirlpools within a stream of consciousness, as the philosopher Bernardo Kastrup says. We're an individual whirlpool, but we're actually not individual in some capacity because we're interconnected. So the body and the brain are actually like filtering mechanisms or antennas for this broader consciousness that's well beyond the body. And with that perspective, that changes how we view our own identity, I think, at least for me. It makes everything that's happening in the world much more relevant to me because everything in the world is within this stream of consciousness that's a part of me. So I think when we adopt this perspective, as Erwin Schrodinger, the Nobel Prize winning physicist, said, he said, in truth, there is only one mind. And it's like we're whirlpools within this one mind. All of a sudden, caring about the welfare of not only our own individual selves, but others in a business sense, in a social sense, in every capacity, that becomes much more important.
That is the message that's probably needed today, because there's so much polarization of society today. And, it's the left against the right. It's I'm right, you're wrong. It's wear a mask, don't wear a mask, isolate, don't isolate. There's a lot of stuff going on out there today. And if we realized we were one mind, if we realized that we were all sharing the same database and we were all connected at some level, I do believe that it would lead us down a different path, which ultimately I believe it will lead us down that different path. But what do you say to that?
I completely agree with you, Ken. And it's been one of the messages I've been getting across and one of the reasons I've felt so compelled to write books and do my own podcast. So there's a phenomenon that relates to exactly what you're saying. It's called the life review that is often reported during near-death experiences. So a near-death experience is when a person, let's say, has cardiac arrest, their heart stops beating, they're clinically dead, and yet they have elaborate memories of hovering over their body, and sometimes they talk about being immersed in unconditional love. This is at a time when the brain shouldn't be capable of making those memories if we assumed certain things about the brain. But if the brain actually limits consciousness and the near-death experience liberates the consciousness, then this makes more sense. So what's the life review? The life review is what happens during this period sometimes when the person's body is basically off. The person relives his or her whole life in a flash. And not only are all the events in life relived through that person's eyes, they also review the events through the lives of each person they impacted. And they feel the joy that they gave to others or the pain. So I interviewed for my podcast, Where's My Mind, a man named Danyon Brinkley, who had 4 near-death experiences. And each time when he was resuscitated, he remembered a life review that started at the beginning of his life and then went to where he was at that current moment. He remembered his time in Vietnam when he told me he was vicious in combat. He relived the deaths of the people that he killed in combat. And not only that, he relived the pain of the child that would no longer have a father because he had killed a father. So he was sort of becoming the one mind and living it through multiple different lenses in this other kind of dimension of reality. And when he came back, he changed his whole life. He became a hospice volunteer and has focused, like many near-death experiencers, on how are my actions impacting others, even the small ones? Because in the life review, what's reported is that those small actions are what actually seem to matter.
Well, you know, I'm just, as you're talking, I'm researching here. There's a new report out that from the 5th European Academy of Neurology Congress, their researchers there have found that basically 1 in 10 people are having near-death experiences right now. Is that amazing?
Well, our resuscitation technology in medicine has gotten so much better that there are many more reports than there used to be hundreds or thousands of years ago. So it used to be that we would hear cases every now and then. Plato's Dialogues, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, they report this. But in the last few decades, medicine has improved so much that, Ken, you're right, that we're getting more reports like this.
Well, that's good. You know, and you and I were talking before the break, before we came on the show today about, you know, I attended a retreat for last week. And, you know, I was talking to you about the science behind being able to go into these higher states of consciousness. So, you know, that is available today. I don't know if people really know that yet. You don't have to, you know, go and hope and pray to have a near-death experience. You don't have to have that. You can actually go into these higher states of consciousness without taking drugs, without going through some crazy, you know, jumping off a bungee cord and scaring yourself to death. You can actually go into these higher states of consciousness. What do you say to that, Mark?
I completely agree. What's nice about the near-death experience is that we can learn from what other people went through. But we don't have to go through that ourselves to make the same changes in our lives and also to achieve similar states. And I mentioned earlier that in the near-death experience, the brain functioning is reduced or it's almost completely off. We see this with psychedelics research, where certain parts of the brain are reduced in functioning when a person has an enriched consciousness during a trip. Where else is this potentially happening? In meditation or spiritual practices like breathing methods or other ways of actually turning the brain off in a certain way to allow us to tap into the broader stream. That's the pattern of getting the thinking mind out of the way and sort of being a channel or a conduit for this much broader intelligence.
That's really good. Well, that second way you talked about meditation is is my path. And I don't usually talk about it much on the radio, but, you know, or on our TV show here. But I think it's an important path that many people, you know, 20 years ago, nobody was even open to these concepts. But things have changed so much. And now they're changing again. There's quantum change that has happened in society around the world. And I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of good that comes out of this. Now, right now, we're in the chaotic part. It doesn't feel like we're losing some freedom. Some people feel like that. And maybe we're going to. But eventually, we're going to have more freedom. And the main thing is that we have the freedom right now to go within ourselves and be able to experience these higher states. How let's just talk about, does this come from the brain, these higher states? Where is this coming from in your experience?
So my view is that the higher state is part of our innate nature. It's actually who and what we are, but our body and our brain restrict that. So reaching these higher states is actually getting the blocks out of the way. So the way I like to analogize it is to say that consciousness, this one mind, is like the sun. And each of us is tapping into the sun, but we have clouds that are blocking the rays. And what happens when we get certain clouds out of the way? We reach these higher states, or we have creative insights. And practices like meditation, which is also, that's been a big part of my development, especially in the last 6 months or so, it's like the clouds start to go away through these practices, and we can be in a more peaceful state and also in a more creative state.
That's great. Okay. Well, listen, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about how to use that brain, that mind, to be able to get what we want in this world. And how do we access those higher states to do that? So we'll be right back. I'll take a break, and we'll talk all about that.
Hi, Ken D. Foster here. If you have a dream to create a wellness product, I'd like to tell you about JBK Wellness Labs. They are a respected contract and white label manufacturer who helps entrepreneurs and companies develop and bring to market dietary supplements, hemp-based CBD products, plus personal care and beauty product lines. JBK Wellness products can be found on the shelves of Neiman Marcus, Whole Foods, Urban Outfitters, CVS, Ritz-Carlton Hotels, Four Seasons Hotels, and multinational direct selling companies. JBK Wellness Labs will walk you through each step from concept through finished product. If you'd like to take your next step in getting your product to market, then start your project today by going to jbkwellnesslabs.com or just Google JBK Wellness Labs.
Are you out to make a difference? Do you need results? Wasabi Publicity is the perfect PR team to help you take your message to the next level. Recognized by PR Week and Good Morning America for innovative practices, Wasabi works with authors, speakers, and organizations committed to doing good in the world. Wasabi believes conversations change the world. Stories you share shape how you think, feel, act, and how you experience life. Ask yourself if your website, social media, and PR coverage reflect the stories you wish to share in the world. Are you making the difference you want to make? Do you have the results you wish to have? Ken D. Foster, Voices of Courage radio show host, says Wasabi is the best in the business, period. Schedule a complimentary PR consultation with Wasabi CEO Drew Gerber at publicityresults.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Today is an amazing day, as I said at the beginning of the show, to really change your thinking, change your thoughts, and be able to step into a greater sense of yourself. And I have just the guy to do that. We've been interviewing Mark Gerber. He is a guy that knows a lot about consciousness and business. And he is talking about his book. We're talking a little bit about the book, The End Upside Down Thinking. So, Mark, I want to go into the brain a little bit more. How does the brain actually limit consciousness?
Well, that's one of the big questions in neuroscience. I don't think it's well understood. The way in which the brain is interacting with consciousness is a big mystery. In mainstream science, many neuroscientists are trying to figure out how the brain is making consciousness. And of course, what I'm arguing and a number of other people are arguing is that, no, it's the other way around. The brain's not making it. And these examples like the near-death experience or psychedelic research or even savant syndrome. These are instances of a person who has an incredible memory or maybe musical abilities, mathematical abilities, and yet the person has severe impairments in other ways and actually damage to the brain. So these are the mysteries of why is it that you can have an enriched consciousness when parts of the brain are sort of knocked out? It's not well understood.
That's interesting. But I do think that once we do understand it, I think we're going to be able to probably cure a lot of things, brain injuries and things of that nature. You know, I have a nephew who has autism, and he responds to certain types of music incredibly, certain types of touch, and it seems to stimulate him. I had a story. I was taking him with me in the car. He had gotten in a fight in his classroom in high school, and he just stopped talking. He was done. He's autistic. He just stopped talking for a year and a half. And I put on this music that had been tested to increase consciousness. And I thought, well, I don't know if this makes sense or not, but I stuck it in the CD. It was a guy by the name of Mark Romero. He was his music and his it's a classical, high vibrational, energetic music. I put it on, and all of a sudden, Jordan starts talking to me, right? And he hasn't stopped talking since, right? This has been several years ago. So, you know, we don't know a lot. I think we know a lot less than we think we know. Yeah. Have you had those kind of experiences or things that of that nature happen?
Well, I think there is something to sound waves and vibration that impacts our physical body and our ability to tap into consciousness in ways that we don't understand. There are binaural beats that people sometimes listen to when they meditate, which can help people access new realms of consciousness. So all that completely resonates. What I found in my own meditations, just by sitting in kind of a surrendered state, and as we were talking about earlier before the show, I went on two silent meditation retreats earlier in 2020 for the first time ever, and both were close to a week long of no talking, no reading except the one-page meditation sheet, no gesturing at people. And what I found in that period is that energies, physical energies that were, I don't know how to explain them, they were palpable and still are, they started entering different parts of my body, starting with the head. And people talk about the third eye. I actually felt pounding there, and that still happens. So something about this period of quieting the brain is allowing access to new sensations, not just thoughts.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. I'll share a story that I've never shared on this show, but when I start speaking and I'm in a place where I'm starting to say something I shouldn't be saying, I have this energy vibration at the back of my head. It's that physical. It tells me to stop. And I do. I actually listened to it today. I didn't when I started. I was like, what is that? What's bugging me here? What's going on? You know, but it's tuning into those higher realms of consciousness. And, you know, I think we all have that. In fact, I know we all of us have this ability. It's for us. It's kind of taking off. I sense there's kind of like a rust over the, I don't know, the soul. And when we can start to remove, what is the rust? The rust is kind of those thoughts, those beliefs, those hurts, those harms, those that stuff that just covers us over. And when we can start to lift that out of ourselves, we start to have different experiences in life. One of those experiences, psychic abilities. I know I'm very empathic. I can feel energy wherever. I wasn't that way when I grew up, but that's something I developed. Maybe I was, but anyway, psychic abilities. Is there evidence for this?
Well, this is one of the big implications of the model that we're kind of whirlpools in a stream of consciousness. Imagine if some of the water from my whirlpool gets into another person's whirlpool. That would be like a psychic or a telepathic effect. And so in my book, An End to Upside Down Thinking, and my podcast, Where's My Mind, I look at the scientific evidence for this. Because if it's true that a telepathic effect occurs scientifically, that supports this model that we're all part of one stream, which is a very big deal. So I'll give the classic experiment for telepathy, mind-to-mind communication. That's been done for many decades, and this is one of the studies. It's in a category of Six Sigma statistical results, according to Dr. Dean Radin. And that means the odds that this is happening by chance alone is more than 1 billion to 1, meaning in other areas of science, it's already accepted as fact, but this is controversial, so it takes time. So imagine you have two people. One person is Bob, just sitting in a room by himself. Another person, Jane, in another room. Jane is shown an image by the experimenters, and they say, Jane, I want you to try to send with your mind this image to Bob in the other room. So Bob doesn't know what Jane's looking at, and Jane is asked to try to mentally send it. And at the end of the period, Bob is shown four pictures by the experimenters, and they say, hey, Bob, which of the four images was Jane trying to send to you? If there were no effect at all, Bob would guess correctly one out of four times. If we looked at many trials, it would approach 25%. Because how could it be possible that Jane could mentally send something without showing Bob something? How could her mind have that effect? Right. Now, what we see in the experiments is that it's closer to 32% of the time that the person in Bob's room gets it correctly, which statistically speaking is a massive deal, meaning that it's not 100% telepathic, but there is something happening beyond what chance would predict, where water from one whirlpool is getting into another.
Wow, that's fascinating. Well, listen, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to dive a little more into the psychic abilities that you and I probably have and how we can start to express those. I want to talk to you a little bit about that. Well, I want to talk to you about one of my favorite sponsors. They're called Women's Wisdom. So listen, if you're a woman entrepreneur, pay attention. There's this amazing organization. They've been around since 1991. They've been empowering women in their businesses to help them grow their businesses, grow their lives, grow their connections. And they bring in every month incredible speakers, authors, and trainers to help you to really take your business to the next level. This month, if you're a woman entrepreneur, on August 27th, I think it is, they have international speaker Lisa Nichols that'll be there. And she's empowered tens of thousands of women around the world. If you'd like to find out more about it, go to womenswisdom.net. Again, womenswisdom.net. Also, I want to thank all of you. My fans, thank you for joining us. Thank you for your comments, your posts, your subscriptions on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and LinkedIn. We really appreciate you, everything you do. If you have any questions or comments for me, please send them to, you just send them directly to me, ken@kendfoster.com, ken@kendfoster.com. Love to get your feedback. And you can check out all of our shows at voicesofcourage.us. Again, voicesofcourage.us. Well, I'm speaking with Mark Gober, and he is the author of An End to Upside Down Thinking, and we're talking about how to end this upside down thinking. You know what? One thing before I get more into the brain with you, Mark, upside down thinking, what does that exactly mean to you?
Well, the way I used to think about life and the way we're kind of taught in science class is that everything is made out of physical stuff called matter. Like my table here is made out of physical atoms, and it's through the compilation of atoms, like in a body. When you put a lot of atoms together, you end up with a biological being like a human being, which develops a brain, and it's the brain that then creates consciousness. So we started with physical matter, like physical stuff we can touch, and out of that, consciousness arises. And that has a lot of implications. So when the body dies, there's no consciousness, because consciousness came from a physical body. And also it implies that consciousness is just kind of stuck in our brain. What I'm arguing is the reverse, that consciousness is fundamental and everything that's a quote unquote material is just appearing within consciousness. It's this one mind, one stream, and we're whirlpools in it.
Well, you know, every morning I wake up and I energize this body. I bring consciousness to every single body part. And I've been doing this for years. And there's science around that, you know, the Olympic athletes and people of that nature. I think I had the psychologist Dennis Waitley on my show last week. He was talking about this, where just by visualizing you building muscle, they've done studies on this, and then they basically grow 10 to 14% of muscle mass just by using the power of consciousness into their body. Consciousness seems to be a lot more than what we think it is. So when the body dies and consciousness leaves the body, this is a great question for you. Where does it go, Mark?
Well, I think on a general sense, what my understanding is that consciousness transitions into a new state. So if we adopt this whirlpool analogy again, we're whirlpools within a stream. When the whirlpool dissolves into the broader stream. It delocalizes. The water doesn't leave the stream. It simply transitions into a new state. And maybe it becomes another whirlpool. It enters some other realm of consciousness. And we can kind of see what happens in the near-death experience when the brain is off and the body's off and people have elaborate experiences, sometimes talk about other dimensions or unconditional love, things that they're not feeling in the body, but then they're resuscitated so we don't get to hear the full story.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Okay, you got this amazing book, and I haven't even told my audience how to get it. How do they get an end to upside down thinking?
Amazon is a great place, or Barnes & Noble, any bookstores. It's called An End to Upside Down Thinking, and the sequel is An End to Upside Down Living, also available there as well.
Oh, I love that. So let me ask you about those books. The End to Upside Down Living, let me focus on that. That's your second one there. What happens when a person reads that book? What do you think can shift in their consciousness?
Well, the book answers one basic question, which I ask the reader to start the book. I say, what is the overall intention of your life? In other words, what is the orientation and how are you setting the compass for your life, driving all of your values and priorities and decisions? And in the book, I build a case for the nature of reality, just like what we're talking about, this one mind. And what are the implications for that for how we think about living our own life? And it ties back to what we talked about earlier, the importance of not only elevating ourselves individually, but thinking about the collective much more and ways in which we can be contributing to the whole because we are the whole at some level.
You know, the yogis talk about consciousness as Sat Chit Ananda, ever existing, ever present, ever new bliss. Is that something for us to strive through? Do you believe?
So that's something I do mention in End to Upside Down Living, that the nature of consciousness itself, when it's fully liberated from the body, the full stream, is this bliss, love, whatever you want to call it, very high level. And that's kind of the nature of consciousness itself. So at some level, we already are that. Mm-hmm. And it seems that the journey of being a human in a body while we are clouded from it. So the sun's still shining. It's just that we've got lots of clouds blocking this Sat Chit Ananda. It is something that we can achieve, but to call it an achievement is almost the wrong word because it's like something that we're going to get. Rather, this process of removing clouds is a process of subtraction. And it's something that we can all do, which I think is a very empowering idea. It doesn't matter who you are. We have this innate consciousness within us that we can tap into.
What would you say first steps are for individuals to start removing some of the, like I call it, the rust? But
yes,
yeah, some of the old stuff. What do you say to that?
Yeah, well, the analogy that I've used because I felt it in meditation is bleaching. It's like a bleaching away of maybe the rust or whatever kind of stuff was there from my past conditioning. What are the ways to get there? So I really like the way the yogic path has described four pathways, which I think can be applied to any spiritual tradition. One is jnana yoga, which is knowledge and wisdom, which is understanding the nature of reality. And that's how I started. I used to think that everything was material. When you die, it's over. Life is random and meaningless. Yes. And I realized that was wrong. So right. The knowledge of that, I think, does something on a metaphysical level. It's like some of the clouds go away and you tap in. Some of the rust is swept away. So right. Knowledge, wisdom is one. Another is very broadly the Raja Yoga category, which is energy practices. And that could be anything physical, could be meditation, yoga, Qigong, things like that. So I've adopted practices like that. There's Karma Yoga, which is selfless service. And that's something anyone can do in any way, whether it seems small or seems big, thinking about serving others without the benefit of our own benefit. And the fourth is known as Bhakti Yoga, which is more devotional. It's having a love for this whole, this consciousness that we're a part of. So knowledge, wisdom, energy practices, selfless service, and devotion. And I try to always think about what am I doing in those four categories because they help remove the rust.
Well, they do. And I love that. I love that devotional, you know, we don't use the word devotion much in the Western world, but, you know, it's such a beautiful word that, you know, it conveys the heart. It conveys compassion. It conveys connection with others besides ourselves, which I think today we need. How do you apply these principles in today's world?
I think it's a big challenge because we're not taught many of these ideas, especially from a mainstream Western perspective. I was never taught a lot of this. So it's kind of catching ourselves when we go back into an old conditioning that doesn't align with this view of reality that we're talking about, interconnectedness, one consciousness, consciousness beyond the body. It's catching ourselves when we get into a negativity that doesn't make sense or an old pattern that doesn't serve us. It's having the recognition to step out of your individual self and almost be like a third party watching and saying, Mark, you just step back into something that's not serving you. And when you can do that, then you're in good shape because you're going to be able to remove rust over time.
That makes sense. Okay, another quick break. We'll be right back. All righty.
There comes a time when you know you need to restart and regain control of your life. A time to seek freedom from the anxiety, addiction, and other issues that may be bringing you down. A time to heal and reemerge as the real you. Villa Kalima is a holistic residential recovery program exclusively for women for individualized treatment. Villa Kalima offers proven clinical and holistic therapies for the mind, body, and spirit to assure sustainable recovery. Villa Kalima focuses on healing the cause, not temporarily masking symptoms. It's the only way to truly recover and find yourself again. Villa Kalima is located in a beautiful, peaceful, resort-like setting and is a licensed and accredited residential treatment center accepting a variety of health insurances. Start your healing and renewal today by calling Villa Kalima in La Costa, California at 760-814-8214. 760-814-8214. Villa Kalima, a place for transformation.
Hi, Ken D. Foster here. If you have a dream to create a wellness product, I'd like to tell you about JBK Wellness Labs. They are a respected contract and white label manufacturer who helps entrepreneurs and companies develop and bring to market dietary supplements, hemp-based CBD products, plus personal care and beauty product lines. JBK Wellness products can be found on the shelves of Neiman Marcus, Whole Foods, Urban Outfitters, CVS, Ritz-Carlton Hotels, Four Seasons Hotels, and multinational direct selling companies. JBK Wellness Labs will walk you through each step from concept through finished product. If you'd like to take your next step in getting your product to market, then start your project today by going to jbkwellnesslabs.com or just Google JBK Wellness Labs.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster, and we are talking to Mark Gober and Gober. Sorry, I don't know. Gober came in. Gober. And Mark is he's a Princeton graduate. He's a business guy. He's created a lot of wealth in his life, and now he's in consciousness. And we're talking about his books, The Courage to Change Upside Down Thinking and The Courage to – or not, excuse me. you say it, Mark. I missed it.
End to upside down thinking and end to upside down living.
Yeah. Well, we could have put courage on there, but it's just the end. Okay, good. You know, as you were talking, I was also thinking of different forms of yoga. There's also Kriya Yoga, which teaches people how to take – again, it's energy medicine. It's Raja Yoga, teaching people how to take energy up and down the spine and back into the higher energy chakras. To be able to transform their lives. You know, I love my commercial that was playing right there, the Villa Kalima one. It was talking about the real you. Mark, how do people get back to the real you? What is the real you?
At some level, the real you is the one mind, the one stream that's been localized into a body. So it feels like there's a Mark and a Ken. And the liberation process, I think, is embodying our true self, our authentic self. And the way I identify that is whatever feels very passionate to me and feels like it's just a yes, where I feel like I'm being myself and not hiding who I am, that's the true self. And in this world, I felt it in my professional life and other areas of my life where I felt like I had to act a certain way because that's how society is, or I had to do things that were not in alignment. And I'm much more attuned now to what feels in alignment and whether or not I'm being actually authentic.
And how do you do that?
It's a trial and error process. It's a matter of feeling. So when you're doing something or saying something or in a certain situation, how are you feeling about it? Do you feel resistance to it? And is that resistance just because the ego is getting in the way, or is there an actual, is this not right for you? And so it's becoming very aware of what feels right and what doesn't feel right, and then being able to say no to the things that don't feel right, to set the boundaries and then start cutting those things, maybe people or situations, out of your life so that the things that you are engaging with are the ones that, where you feel very authentic.
I really like that. I'd like to plus that with you a little bit. You know, I ask myself a lot, you know, why is there so common sense so uncommon out there? And what I get is that there's people don't have developed wisdom, a lot of people. So what we need to do is just like you were saying, pause before you take action and think about, is this coming from the soul? Is this coming from higher consciousness? Just ask that question. Is this coming from a higher consciousness? Is this coming from my soul? Or is this coming from wisdom? Or something else, from the ego or from a hurt or a harm or something that happened in the past? We can do our own inner work. I think that's what you're saying, and that's what I'm definitely saying.
Yes. And the key step there is what you're identifying, where you can actually see it in yourself and not just go through the motions. That's what I found the hardest. Because we're running on programming from so much in our earlier life. And to stop ourselves and say, wait, what's going on? And once you get into the process of being able to analyze yourself, I think it's an upward trend.
Well, I believe we have an identity crisis in the world, and especially in the United States. We believe that we are our car or our house or how much money we make. And people have kind of gotten complacent with that. Oh, yeah, you know, this is who I am. I work here. I do this. It has nothing to do with who they are. It has to do with what they do, what role they play. But, you know, identity, I love what you said, identity. So how do we start to re-identify ourselves, Mark?
Well, I can give my own path, where I used to think my identity was my body and that actually I am Mark and I have a consciousness that allows me to experience that comes from this body. And now I think that view is incorrect scientifically and for a lot of other reasons. So now I view myself as this universal consciousness that's having the experience of a physical world through the vehicle of Mark. But that same universal consciousness is having probably an infinite number of unique experiences, for the example, through the vehicle of Ken and through other biological vessels.
Well, you know, we touched a little bit earlier on the near-death experiences and people going into different realms of consciousness. What we didn't tap on is there any science around reincarnation at this point? I wonder, you're such a researcher. It's not something we plan to talk about. But
yeah, well, I would not have been open to reincarnation several years ago, but now I think it's likely part of the nature of reality, where one whirlpool dissolves into the broader stream, but that water can be recycled into a new whirlpool conceptually. The evidence for that, I think the strongest evidence, comes from the University of Virginia. For over 50 years, they've been running a division of perceptual studies where they examine children, usually between the ages of 2 and 5 years old, who start speaking about a life that is not their own. And the details are sometimes so specific that the researchers have been able to find historical or medical records that align with what the child says. And I think in even the best cases, the child has a physical birthmark or defect that aligns with what happened to someone in a past life in their medical records, or not in a past life, but someone else's life, someone who died, and the medical records align with what happened to that previous person. These are young kids that shouldn't be able to recall or even speak about some of these things. And the researchers looking at over 2,500 cases have concluded that reincarnation is the best explanation.
Well, it kind of makes a lot of sense. I mean, I watch America's Got Talent and I see these 10-year-olds, 8-year-olds coming on that would take tens of thousands of hours to train their voice the way that they can sing. And or play an instrument, whether it be a violin, or, you know, we're talking tens of thousands of hours to be master these things. And these kids come on and they're playing everything. They're playing piano. They're like a Mozart coming in. So it does seem to make sense to me. I'm just kind of a lay guy, but
yeah, that's how I feel. And it actually raises an important question about just medicine and biology that I think is probably going to change all those fields. In traditional thinking about the body, there are two things that can impact us, our genetics and our environment, that it can influence the body. Genetics and environment, those are the two factors. But if we're talking about a memory from a past life or a skill from a past life or a physical deformity or a birthmark that comes from something that's not this body, the University of Virginia researchers say there's a potential third factor. So an entire factor that our medicine and biology are not acknowledging. Think about how revolutionary that could be.
A third factor. What's the third factor? Identify. What is that?
I would say that it has to do with consciousness.
Yeah.
That it's not just the body.
Yeah. Well, we've done a lot of studies on consciousness, on how consciousness can impact matter, right? If you're viewing, you're the researcher, you give me the impact. What is the study around that?
Yeah, it's called psychokinesis in the science community. It's the ability for the mind to impact matter, which conceptually makes sense. If everything is consciousness, if you shift consciousness, you're going to shift physical reality. What's the scientific evidence for that? I think the best research comes from Princeton. There was a lab for 30 years, which I didn't even, almost 30 years. I didn't know about it when I was there because it was so controversial, run by the former dean of engineering. He had people put their mental intention to a machine that was generating zeros and ones randomly. So 50% ones, 50% zeros over a long period of time. And they say, hey, Ken, try to make the machine produce more ones and zeros without touching it. Just use your mind. And the researchers find there's this very small effect. The machine, statistically speaking, produces more ones than zeros when a person is making the intention for that to happen. So think about the implications. I mean, that's a very small example because it's a small effect, but it shows that the mind is impacting physical reality in ways that we can't always interpret.
That's very interesting. Well, okay. We're just about out of time. Mark, what's your message to the world today?
Well, my new book, An End to Upside Down Living, asks this question: what is the overall intention of your life? And the way I used to think about life is, well, there's no meaning to life. Why should I even ask that question? And now I have a very different perspective, which is that we are vessels of this one mind consciousness. And I think the best thing that we can do, at least this is where my thinking is now, is to perfect ourselves to become the best and purest vessel of this universal consciousness and intelligence so that we can be of service to the whole. And that's how I've started to live much more, is how am I improving myself, working on myself, letting go of things that don't serve me in an effort to be a better vessel to serve the world.
I really like that. And I just comment on what you said about that first part where you were starting. There's no meaning to life. A lot of people think that there's no meaning to life. Any meaning that's in life is what we give it. And when we start to realize, well, that there's a half truth there. There is meaning. If you give life meaning, there happens to be meaning. But there's something greater than that. And I think that's what you're talking about. And I think that's what we're learning. We're learning about how to expand the understanding of not only how our minds work, but how we're all connected and how we can work together in harmony to create a world that really works for everybody. So I think that's what you're about, and I hate to put words in your mouth, but that seems to be what you're about. What you say to you?
You said it very well, Ken. And the way I used to think is that life had no intrinsic meaning, that we could make up meaning, but it's just a way of rationalizing because we're going to die anyway, so it's just to comfort ourselves. And now I think, no, it's actually built into the fabric of the universe, this desire to evolve. And when we look back at the life review, where people in a flash relive their lives and they see the impact of their loving or unloving actions, not only on the person they directly affected, but also the indirect effects. So being nice to a cashier and seeing how the cashier then has a better mood with all the other people in line later in the day. That idea that we are interconnected and we're here to evolve the collective, it puts a new meaning on everything. And it's a way of directing the compass for all of our intentions.
Well, you know, you give hope to capitalism, because I believe that capitalism is a wonderful system to generate wealth and help a lot of people. But, you know, it's I think sometimes that greed and all the other vices get in the way of capitalism, which gives it a bad rap. So I think once we start to realize we are all connected, not only are we connected, there's something past this lifetime. And if you are, it's not coming from a place of shame or guilt or blame. It's a place of wanting to live at a greater level and helping others at a greater place. In other words, being a more service to more people. When we have that mindset and that starts to permeate this planet more and more, I think we're going to have a better world. What say you?
I agree with that. It's one of the reasons I decided to leave the business world and write books and do podcasts on this, because now that's what I think is important, is to help people understand what has shifted my life personally for those who are interested in it. And a word comes to mind that I mentioned in my new book, An End to Upside Down Living, stewardship. This idea that we all have things that we can contribute, and they might be different. They might be skills. Someone might be a really good chef or really good at medicine or good at business, but also stewards of resources, money, things that we have to give to the world. And that's when we think about business and capitalism, having that perspective rather than just a selfish perspective of let me accumulate as much as I can, and then, you know, he or she who dies with the most toys wins. That's kind of the materialistic mindset. If you shift that and say, no, it's about being a steward of resources and reallocating money in ways that can help the planet in the best way possible, that gives capitalism new meaning.
Gives capitalism new meaning. And I think that capitalism someday, and my hope is that it switches from a selfish mind point for many people. You know, it's all about me and what you just described, to a place where we all win. The companies win, the owners of the companies win, the stockholders win, and their customers really win. And it's not about what's in it for me. It's what it's in it for about us. What's in it for us, not what's in it for me. I think when we have that mindset, then everything shifts. And I think that's the mindset we need to keep putting out there. We're, again, like I said, we were earlier in the show, we're very polarized. Okay. But, you know, sometimes you have to go to extremes to understand what you are and who you are and what you're about. And so I do believe that that process is happening for us. So, Mark, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been a great show. I really enjoyed spending the hour with you. I'm glad we had this time together. Thank you so much. And the book, tell them a little bit about the book and we'll close here.
Well, thank you, Ken, and thanks for all that you do to get these messages out to the world. My books, An End to Upside Down Thinking and An End to Upside Down Living, they're available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the major bookstores. And my podcast, Where's My Mind, where I've interviewed many of the scientists, like the scientists at the University of Virginia who study past lives and near-death experiences. Where is My Mind? It's available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all the major players.
Awesome. Okay, man. Thank you so much for being here. And for all of you, thank you for joining us today. For the replays, just go to voicesofcourage.us. Again, voicesofcourage.us. Hope to see you again next week. Take care. Have a blessed week.